Hopefully no more. We're very confident whoever's back there. We're very confident everybody in this locker room. Everybody's here for a reason, like I just said. And we're going to rally the troops, and we're going to do the best that we can, offense, defense, special teams, to help out whoever's back there, because we are one solid team here, and we're going to help whoever it is.
Unless we're trying to knock the crap out of each other in practice. TJ Watt there. To start today's show, it is the PM team. It's presented by Chafin Luhana Injury Law Firm, doing good by doing right. If you didn't catch the reference there, we'll tell you about it in a second. I'm Andrew Filippone. He's Chris Muller. Craig Riley is already asking questions about the Huntington Bowl tonight. Where to put the money, the smart side. We've got our sports betting.
The only loser in tonight's Huntington Bowl is Neil Huntington and the Pirates, who, I remind you, gave up on Garrett Cole and gave up on Tyler Glass now. And as Eric told me,
you sound like you're in a nice mood today, Malzy. How are you, baby? You okay?
I
went
to
Hugh Jackman last night. That was marvelous.
Amanda put a lovely picture up of the two of you. She was beaming. You had a Nationals hat on.
And I was
a nice bit of foreshadowing.
I was in a great mood.
Yeah.
After that,
the
Nationals to win the NL ticket.
Looking real.
Very alive.
Nice. Yeah.
Very much alive.
Yes, I am good. I'm always good.
Just want to make sure.
I'm always good, but I'm always pissed off, if that makes
sense. So let's go to the Caboli report here. I love calling it that. Like just giving it some Caboli oomph.
If he was ever an investigative journalist, it could never have been Bernstein and Caboli. It wouldn't have had the same kind of. Yeah.
The Cabolis.
Caboli and Bernstein, it wouldn't have worked. But he's got quite a report with a very angry-looking Cam Hayward plastered at the top of it.
A couple of big hits in practice yesterday. Marcus Allen, Penn State, who has done nothing with the Steelers, other than, I guess, slam into James Conner in practice yesterday. And then on the very next play, Cam Kelly popped Juju Smith-Schuster. Now,
the positive here is Juju held onto the ball after that hit.
That was not included in the story.
Oh, okay, so I can't go with it.
You want to report that as fact? Is this now a Mueller?
I'm just assuming that
nugget?
Juju held on to the ball there.
Why would you?
Good point.
Okay. I'm going to give you some quotes here from this story in The Athletic, and then we can parse through them and debate this and discuss it. David DeCastro, when asked, I don't want to talk about it. Okay. Ramon Foster said to the defensive players, quote, you should know better. When the season starts, you become a pro to each other, to the team, to the community. Also said, quote, it was idiotic. Cam Hayward, captain of the defense, quote, you have to emulate the game in practice. Cam Kelly, it was just an accident. The last part, I think, is complete bullcrap. I think this was...
Cam Kelly's a professional quality athlete, even if he was playing in the AAF. So
totally orchestrated.
Accidents like that don't just happen.
And if I'm going to pick a side here, is Andrew Filippone team offense or team defense? This is an easy one for me. I don't think this is really a gray area story.
I think it's quite black and white.
Defense.
Correct. You know why they're probably hitting guys? You know why they're hitting Juju? You know why they're hitting Connor? Especially Juju in this case? Because the offense fumbled away a chance to win that game and fumbled away, frankly, a great effort by the defense. Go look at Baltimore's team stats for their first four games. Then go look at their team stats for the Steelers game. The defense, but for a bad start, did their job.
I'm going to go into the Pony archives to hopefully make my point. I've got the latch.
Dewey Decimal System, yeah.
I'm opening up the code.
A little
I'm spinning the wheel.
Yeah, the vault.
And I'm opening up the vault.
Okay.
And I am remembering Paul Christ. Not really that energetic or exciting, but
I'm remembering. This is one boring vault. This is like when Geraldo opened Capone's vault.
Paul
here.
Christ is not really complicated, and you'll find that out.
I'm remembering Paul Christ and that story about pit practices, pit training camp. They had Russell Shell, America's all-time leading rusher, Hopewell to Pitt. And he told guys in practice, do not go soft on him. We need to hit him, sometimes even after the whistle. He needs it to be better. So is it like your classic description or what you're used to seeing, Foster says in this story, in training camp, it's no holds barred, but we're a family once we get into the regular season. Sometimes a family needs tough love. And both of the guys, it is not an accident. If this story, if it was, wow, what a weird day at Steelers training camp. Deontay Johnson got lit up. And then on the very next play, Benny Snell got his bell rung. That I would probably take exception with. These are two guys that have come up with two gigantic mistakes because they can't hold on to the ball. Therefore, I don't think they should get veteran privileges in practice. Steelers they should be taking an extra hit.
Dating back to last year, which has nothing to do with Cam Kelly, Juju fumbles away the playoffs.
Yep.
If Connor and Smith-Schuster hold on to the ball, they are 3-2 most likely right now. I cannot say for sure that they win the Frisco game. I cannot say for sure that they win the Baltimore game, but I can say with a pretty good idea here that they win both of them. They're 3-2, and then even a guy, you know what? If you hate the Browns takes from this side of the room, if the Steelers were 3-2 and had won those two games and the Browns were imploding like they appear to at least somewhat be, I would probably be changing my tune on who's going to win this division. Instead, we've got them hitting each other at practice because two guys couldn't hold on to the damn football. Man, how could you be on anything but the defense's side right now? They're the better group because being good on offense means not putting the ball on the ground.
Well, I'm guessing the devil's advocate or rebuttal to this would be they're already a mash unit offensively with so many injuries. Why would you risk further injury in practice? Why would you want friendly fire?
Sometimes the risk is worth it.
You know what?
I
think that the defense's message is we're done going soft on Juju and James Conner. We're frustrated in the offense costing us games.
I mean, I'm tired of hearing a lot of like the talk about, well, I'll do better this time from either guy that fumbles. Like, I'm tired of hearing the whatever defenses remain of, man, they're going to try hard. They know they can't do that. They won't put it on the ground anymore.
You know what? How about this?
Talk is cheap.
Yeah, not
only
that.
Hold on to the ball.
I want to see this offensive line look like a dominant offensive line. They're getting paid like one.
If they're all mad about the defense whooping on them, go out and make an example of the Chargers.
Amen.
You're pissed, Ramon Foster? Take Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa and make them ragdolls.
I'd love to see it.
Villanueva, pile drive somebody.
Yep.
This is one of the few games coming up where, given the situation, admittedly, I won't say this if it's the end of the game, but if an offensive lineman took an unnecessary roughness penalty early on in the game, I wouldn't even be that mad about it because it would suggest to me that maybe the defense got through to them. Start kicking asses because the season's swirling the drain and it's mostly your fault.
The defense got three Lamar Jackson interceptions. They're setting the Steelers offense up for short yards. And what are they doing with it?
The defense had five takeaways against the 49ers, including one that looked like it was going to give the Steelers the chance to win the game, even with a bad offensive performance. Ball on the ground again. Man, I have been really down on this defense for most of this year, but the last couple of weeks they have started to find something.
You know what? I got to tell you something. This actually fires me up about this defense.
I'm glad everyone in that story seems mad, and I'm extra glad that Cam Hayward is basically throwing gasoline on it saying, man, I love it.
Me too.
Good. Be mad at each other. The offense should be mad. The defense should be furious.
Well, I don't think
Juju should have his tail between his legs. And frankly, James Conner has to feel the same way.
I don't think the offense has a right here to act like they got victimized.
I don't mean mad about this. I mean mad that they're playing poorly enough and that the ball security from two of the best players supposedly on that offense has been bad enough that the defense takes
an
extreme measure.
You know what it also tells me? That those defensive guys don't think that it was just great plays by Marlon Humphrey or, the gang tackle in San Francisco. It tells me that the defensive guys believe, the Steelers defensive players believe, that they need to go extra hard on Juju and James Conner.
They do.
They need to do something to get more out of both those guys. And maybe increased intensity in practice might be a way
James
to do that.
James Conner's not running away from people on his big runs. He's running through people.
Yes.
Get him mad.
And you know what? Two things have happened since this story have come out, I think, that show that the defense is the right side of the argument. The first one is this. Marcus Allen's still on the team. He was not kicked out of practice. If he did something that Mike Tomlin thought was gratuitous or egregious or totally out of the box, he's not going to let his practice squad lay out the star running back.
Cabale points this out by saying when Clifton Gethers comes in to replace Brett Kiesel in 2014 and goes hard, the Steelers line basically dogpiled them and just absolutely crushed him, and then he was off the team shortly thereafter. Marcus Allen's a disposable part if you want to make an example of somebody because you think he was in the wrong. Clearly, the defensive head coach of this team doesn't think so. And you know what? You said you were mad that Mike Tomlin was not harder on Juju accountability-wise.
Yeah.
And I disagreed with the tweet because I don't know if it would have changed any. It doesn't change anything after the fact. But Mike Tomlin's sending a not subtle message here if you're willing to look at it this way. He's saying,
we need more out of our offense.
No,
we need our defense
need
to rattle their cage and shake them
everybody
up.
Everybody knows they need more. He's saying, I'm washing my hands of defending you guys from your own teammates. Maybe from the media, I'm not going to air you out. But if these guys want to exact a little bit of kind of on-the-field justice and retribution because they're mad, so be it.
You know what? The only thing this story is missing is, like, Todd Haley being involved somehow.
Breaking his
Could
hip.
You imagine if he had been there?
I have an opinion on it.
Todd actually doesn't do anything wrong but gets his, like, leg broken because somebody runs into him.
Once again, that's our coach Todd.
Craig, what side are you on here?
The defense. They're playing better. They get to do what they want. Until the offense steps their game up, they can't complain that these guys are hitting them.
Right? Juju and James Conner don't have a leg to stand on in this. The fumbles are what they are. I don't know how any reasonable defense of either man could be fashioned here. That Juju play especially. Because Connor's play happens with, what, several minutes left in the game. Maybe you hold them to a field goal and get a tie.
And Juju said it himself. He should have saw it coming, right?
Yeah, but yes, because it happened on the first play where he avoided it. Man, I'm so glad this happened. And I'm so glad it got written about. Because I'm so sick and tired of guys at the professional level saying, I've got to do better. No one cares. That's for high school.
A sporting event that is predicted by one TV expert. A television event tonight that is predicted by one media expert to beat Penguins Ducks in the ratings.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'll tell you what that is coming up next. We're brought to you by Pittsburgh's number one Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram dealer, ShorkyNorthHills.com. Bruce Gradkowski going to join us at 3 on Duck Hodges and more. It's the PM team. And
here's the pitch. He swings and belts one in deep right center field. Way back. Going. And gone. Goodbye. Halfway up the pavilion. A tremendous game. Tying home run by Juan Soto. And Dave Roberts on his way to the mound. The Nationals have hit back-to-back home runs off Kershaw.
And they'd win it with a Howie Kendrick grand slam off of Joe Kelly. Washington is a wild card team. Yes, a wild card team. A one-game playoff team advancing into the NLCS, something the Pirates failed to do after receiving the wild card invitation for 3 straight years. 93.7 The Fan time is 2:31. It's brought to you by Service Master of Greater Pittsburgh. Water, fire, or mold issues demand the yellow van. An update on Mason Rudolph for Sunday from Steelers offensive coordinator Randy Fichtner in a few minutes. Bruce Gradkowski is going to join us at 3 o'clock. How about this now for Kershaw, Chris, in the playoffs? 9-11 record, 4.43 ERA in 25 starts.
Yeah, that's not good. And it's enough of a sample size to make it pretty obvious that, like, Clayton Kershaw is a different pitcher in the postseason, i.e. a very bad one compared to what he is in the regular season.
Do you put him now in Bonds' class? Is he Barry Bonds' level choker?
He's
in
worse.
The playoffs?
I think he's worse. At least Bonds.
So you think this is worse than Bonds in Pittsburgh?
Not worse. I'm talking about worse than Bonds for his career.
How about Bonds in Pittsburgh?
No, it's on that level. It's similar. I guess it's maybe a little better because what a 4-something ERA relative to his own work is still not like as catastrophically bad as Bonds. At least Bonds, once he got to San Francisco and had that 0-2 World Series during his like insane run, hit really well in that series and was their best player. He at least had one run like that. When has Kershaw been the Dodgers' best player or best pitcher in a series? Like, I mean, really brought the goods over and over again. He came up and was just chucking meatballs. The first pitch to Rendon that got hit out was a good piece of hitting. The one Soto hit like 450 feet was just right there, middle. What was that?
I'm looking at the series the Dodgers have won, okay, since he's been in their rotation in the playoffs, going all the way back to 09. So he's 21-09, makes a start against the Cardinals in the NLDS, 6 2/3. Two runs, so that was good. That's a 2.7 ERA.
Mm-hmm.
2013 NLDS against the Braves. Two starts, one win, 0.69 ERA. So early in his career, he was good in the playoffs. And listen to these ERAs after that. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
6.30, 782, 263, 584, 3, 568, 402, 0. And here comes the last three series. NLCS World Series and this year's NLDS. 409, 736, 711.
He's probably cost them at least one World Series. In fact, you could pretty much definitively say that, couldn't you? That if he pitches like normal Clayton Kershaw, regular season, they have at least one World Series, probably more?
Well, let's see. His World Series ERA is 4.02, and then the other one was 7.36. Yeah. In one World Series, he pitched like Joe Musgrove. In the next World Series, he pitched like
Joe Block.
I was going to say Neveroskis. But okay, if you want to throw Block under the bus, by all means. I like Block. Will you bring yourself to watch the Huntington Bowl tonight?
Probably not, because I just don't care as much about baseball when the Pirates aren't involved. I'll probably
No, the Pirates are involved, Chris. That's the point. The Pirates are involved. This is the closest we'll see to the Pirates in the playoffs for a long, long time is this game.
No, because you know what? Everyone's going to watch it.
Too painful?
Everyone's going to watch it to sort of, it's painful, but it's like group catharsis and then to sort of laugh at Neil Huntington. But Neil Huntington's still employed, and so are all the people that aided and abetted this. Joe Delacari.
So it's just
going to
make you more upset, and you don't want to.
It's probably going to be like a 1-0 pitcher's duel where the two starters strike out a combined 30 hitters, and then Neil Huntington's sitting there on his Barca lounger going, why aren't they pitching to contact? They haven't retired any of these.
Where are the two-seam fastballs?
I haven't seen anybody go down in less than three pitches.
Yeah.
Where's the contact? I love Starkey's column about it today.
Oh, yeah. We'll get more into that a little bit later.
That was beautiful.
It was excellent. Bruce Gradkowski is going to join us in a half hour. What did Randy Feetner say about Mason Rudolph? Is he going to start on Sunday? Any clues or hints? You'll find out next. It's the PM team.
To be able to see him just up on his 2 feet again, walking around, saying hello to the guys and everything, it's scary. Obviously, going through it once with Ryan, to kind of see a guy down like that, it's very scary, and a lot of things flash through your mind, but we have great medical staff here to make sure that he goes through the right channels and checks every box to make sure that he's ready to go before they put him back out there.
Follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan, driven by Shorkey Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, locations in North Huntington and the North Hills. That's Steelers outside linebacker TJ Watt. How relieving it is to see Mason Rudolph back at practice. We don't have Thursday's practice report yet. That'll be made available about an hour from now. We do have Randy Feetner wrapping up with reporters minutes ago saying that The team has not made a decision on quarterback yet, that they're still weighing their options with Hodges and Rudolph. Chris?
Man, that is curious to me.
You think that's subterfuge? You think that's coach speak? You think it's a little Mike Sullivan gamesmanship?
A little gamesmanship, a little deception. If it's legit and they really haven't, then it would kind of fly in the face of all that confidence I thought they had in Duck, because then they would clearly just be trying to bide their time and hope Rudolph could actually go. Like, if you think Rudolph's anything less than basically 100% or like 95%, don't you play Duck? Isn't that just like an open and shut case? Are they trying to help Duck by hoping that they can convince people Rudolph's going to go? I don't know. Subterfuge is a good option, but I'm getting this sneaking suspicion they really want to get Rudolph back in there if they think he's even remotely
able. Had Rudolph ahead of Hodges on the depth chart going into the Ravens game, so it stands to reason that if both guys are healthy, they would not flip-flop them based on Ravens' performance. I think it's so hard, this whole thing with Rudolph. It's so complicated for me because there are so many contradictory aspects of his evaluation. For example, the Steelers, we have a first-round grade on him. We trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick because we believe with Mason Rudolph, we can still win. The season's not dead just because Ben Roethlisberger is wearing an iPhone watch and has his hand mummified on the sidelines or arm mummified. We're still in this to win this. But then the game plan with Rudolph, is so conservative.
Hyper-conservative.
Oh, my God.
Some of the most misleading traditional stats you'll ever see because they were accomplished on the backs of just very short passes.
Rudolph's two starts, San Francisco and Cincinnati, the two games where he played from beginning to end, 66% of his throws were 5 yards or less, traveled 5 yards or less. That is by far the highest percentage in the NFL. This comes from ESPN. One more on that. So fans say, but he's so good at throwing the deep ball. Okay. 3 of 11 for 99 yards on deep balls. Now, I think all three of those are touchdown passes, by the way.
Deontay Johnson twice. And are they counting the juju catch and run?
I think so. Yeah, right?
Man, when I think deep ball, don't you think that high arcing goes off the screen and drops in the
basket? Rudolph does not throw like a laser line drive deep ball. It goes way up like a punt.
Yeah, he throws a high arcing ball. And every time I've seen him throw one of those, it hasn't really been particularly close. And can you remember one that even went off somebody's hands?
No. People have said to me, like, why are you so down on Rudolph? And my instant reaction, the Andrew Filippone company line is, I'm not really down on him right now as a person or as a quarterback. I'm down on the way the coaching staff uses him. The way they choose to use Mason Rudolph makes me think that they don't have a lot of confidence in him.
They think he can either maybe hit deep, like the occasional deep shot if it's wide open, if it's schemed open, and they feel like they have the best chance to win by letting him make extremely safe throws. And make no mistake, this is what the next part of this is, hoping for the best, because they don't have the kind of playmakers who take short plays anymore and turn them into big ones. Like Hodges, I went back and watched Hodges on the coach's film last night to see all the little angles and see the safeties and all that stuff.
Man, what made you do Devlin Hodges homework last night?
If you're going to write a column about Duck and you want to like feel good about it after the fact, The throws weren't as perfect as I thought. The interception was bad, and then it wasn't as like gleaming of a line as I thought it was, or it wasn't as gleaming of a performance, but they still let him throw the ball down the field. Like, I was still struck by the degree of difficulty on some of the passes he completed. And it isn't that Mason Rudolph hasn't completed those. It's that they haven't given him a chance to complete them.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think, like, you're helping me formulate my thoughts on this more clearly. So I feel like with Rudolph, it's either all or nothing. They're either designed, like, very short throws where the ball's sometimes not even traveling past the line of scrimmage, and they're not checkdowns. They're, like, designed for him to throw the ball 6 inches, or he takes a 40-yard shot downfield. With Hodges, I saw more intermediate throws. Do you follow me on that? Like there were a lot more throws that I would put in the middle,
in the 10 to 19-yard category.
Yeah,
because it's either when you like go to Pro Football Focus, or when you go to any site that charts this stuff. There's your 0 to 10, right, or 0 to 9, 10 to 19, and then 20 and above. And I think in the NFL, and correct me if I'm wrong, whenever you hear the Barnwells, the smart guys out there.
The Rileys,
the Barnwells, the Aaron Schatzes, et cetera, the Palazzolos of the world, the JerMichael Finleys who played the game, so he should know it. They value that 10 to 19 more than the other two, do they not?
Well, the big thing for Ben was always yards per attempt. Remember that stat on him?
I know, but that's a big thing for every quarterback now because it's overall a success generator. Like, it's just how successful are you? And I think in the NFL, most people would want their quarterback, if they could pick one of those three places to be great, it'd be 10 to 19 because that's where you can do consistent damage.
So here's what the pro Mason Rudolph people will tell you. If you go by traditional stats, Mason Rudolph this afternoon is 9th in the NFL in passer rating. It is exactly 100. His passer rating is pretty much equal to Ben Roethlisberger's last year, when he led the NFL in passing yards. As of this very second, Mason Rudolph has a higher passer rating than Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers.
I don't know, but then I think about, like, what does a really dangerous quarterback look like? And I think of Russell Wilson, who's leading the league in passer rating at, like, 126.3, I think. And he's only throwing 25 to 30 passes a game, but he's going down the field with them, man. Like, I'm pulling up his charts right now, and he's throwing aggressive passes successfully. They're not giving Mason Rudolph a chance. If anything, I guess I would chalk his passer rating up to good play calling. They've insulated him to an almost astronomical degree.
And I think a premium example of that, a great example of that, is what happened at the end of the first half against the Ravens. That little, first of all, Ben does not, I don't think, he has more sense of time and place and game management than to drop the ball off to Jalen Samuels over the middle.
Yep.
I think in part, the reason why Tomlin did not want to call a timeout there is because in the back of his head, he's thinking, I am more than okay with a field goal on this.
He didn't want to risk an interception by Mason Rudolph maybe taking
a shot. Also didn't want to gamble on a big play either. They had the time and the timeouts there, the time on the clock and the timeouts at the end of the first half against Baltimore to try to score a touchdown. And Tomlin said, you know what? I'm good. We'll let all this time come off the clock. I'll keep a timeout in my back pocket going into the locker room. If that had happened with Roethlisberger, he would have body slammed Tomlin on the way to the locker room.
Yep.
Ben would have called the timeout himself. That ball would have been caught and tackled. Samuels would have gone down, and Ben would have went, boom, timeout, right there. But Rudolph, A, doesn't have the authority to do that, and B, Tomlin's like still, for whatever reason, milquetoast and timid.
Man,
with this guy.
I am looking at these charts right now, dude. I have to bring this up. And, like, the NFL's next-gen stats, they're getting better and better. So they'll show, like, the little green dots, where were the completions and everything else. Everything, virtually everything in Rudolph's scatter plot on every week is within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage, usually, like, clustered hard within 5. I'm looking at Wilson, 25, 30, 40 yards down the field with regularity.
But people will say don't compare the two because one guy's an MVP candidate, the other started the year as a backup quarterback. Go even look at Daniel Jones and Kyle Allen. Now, Jones, first-round pick.
Kyle Allen's
undrafted.
Yeah, Kyle Allen's the best one here because he's more like Duck than he is like Mason in terms of pedigree. In fact, Allen's the most recent undrafted free agent to win his first career start. I'm looking at Kyle Allen. I'll cherry-pick here a little bit. In week 4... I see a bunch of plays between 10 and 20, and then I see one deeper than 20. More to the point here, and this is what I want to drive home, I see a bunch of incompletions down the field.
Yep.
They're at least shooting their shot.
Bruce Gradkowski will get his honest evaluation and analysis on Rudolph and Hodges. Who would he play and start on Sunday in L.A.? Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy, Route 19 of the South Hills, October 15th. Get down there as they put on an event to fight breast cancer. 73 degrees right now, a low of 49. It's the PM team on 93.7 The Fan.